coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome, folks, to this edition of the Hagman Report. It is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024. I want to welcome everyone to today's program. I want to thank you for your belief and trust in us. And I was talking to Eric the Tech before the show. You know, a lot of people, I mean, all of us, obviously, we have only so much time in the day. And there are so many, there's only so many podcasts, so many podcasts you can listen to, broadcasts you can watch during the course of your free time during the day, unless you're like me, which, you know, I constantly, I've got really two monitors going with two different broadcasts at the same time, pretty much all the time. But I thank you. I thank you for tuning in. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you. Because to borrow a phrase from Dan Bongino, you know, it's more important for this platform, for me, to be correct than first. And I've always said that, actually. I've said that back in my investigative days, which is, of course, still continue. It's more important to be accurate than first out with the information. And I could cite you numerous cases where a lot of other detectives working, in fact, one case working the same case I was, they were first out with information, but it was inaccurate. And I came back and handed the client the accurate information. And I've got to tell you, it was satisfying to know that my information was correct. Not just correct, but enough to put a person in prison, enough to put another person on probation, and it all worked out well. Plus, on the civil side of things, of the same case, being able to support that client and have that client made whole. So I apply the same principles to this broadcast. So having said all of that, again, I want to thank you for tuning in, and thank you because what you hear from here, from this platform, is well-researched, I mean rigorously researched information. When it comes from me, now, again, I'm speaking for me, not my guests, although I try to have the best guests on as possible. When I speak for me, it's really, really research. Now, speaking of that, I don't usually do this, and I haven't done this in a long time, folks. You know I'm an author as well as a talk show host. I've authored really three books. One is out of print. It was a surveillance manual that really became outdated because of the equipment that was always changing. The tactics remain the same, but the equipment, of course, changed, which made everyone's life easier. But having said all of that, during my investigative time, I worked murder cases. I worked my uncle's murder case. It was a cold case, unsolved for 5 years. And during that investigation, I wish I would have known Russ Dizdar back then, because the investigation I conducted took place in 1987. In 1988, but 1987 primarily. And I've written two books on that. The first one, Stained by Blood, available on Amazon. And the second one here, and this is kind of the one I really, I hope people grab a hold of this book, In the Dark of Night. But although it's kind of a series, this book stands alone. There is a sort of not a rehash, but certainly you can read this without having to read the first book. Although I will add, the first book will be republished. Okay, same title, but a different cover, different formatting to fit this book. And a third book is coming out. But I ask, humbly ask, folks, if you really want to get a taste of book three, which will be coming out soon. But if you want to get a taste of what Russ Dizdar was dealing with back in the 80s, what I was dealing with back in the 80s on a real-life murder investigation of a family member. And by the way, that's frowned upon. Obviously, you know that, right? You don't work your family's cases. But in this case, being private in the private sector, I did. And of course, I had a partner. And together, we solved a five-year-old cold case in roughly 5 months. Think about that. But the details are recounted in the Dark of Night, Blood of the Innocent. But this also applies today. This also applies today because what's in here touches upon the human and child sex trafficking that we see today. Because it's not new. What we're seeing today is not new. It's just more prolific. The satanic ritual abuse that went on back in the 80s and well before that and well after that is referenced in here. Now, this I wrote this book so anyone really over the age of 13 may read this. There's no profanity. There is a little bit of graphic information in here, but nothing that would make this any more than a PG book, okay? Or a PG book just because of the subject information. In the Dark of Night, available on Amazon. I would really appreciate it if you would purchase it. And by the way, if you have, and read it. And if you already have and didn't leave a review, leave an honest review. Leave an honest review. If you think it sucks, it's okay. It sucks. If you think it's good, then say so. I've got 207, I think, roughly reviews right now and a 4.8 rating and 4.7 on Goodreads. So I want to thank you for that. And there's a reason I'm asking you to do that. We have to bring attention to what's going on with respect to the child sex trafficking because just like P. Diddy, P. Daddy, Poof Daddy, whatever, okay, things will be coming out. And I guarantee you, this book came out in 2020, I believe. Things will be coming out that will verify what's in this book. I guarantee you. Guarantee it. All right. Have a lot to talk about. And I want to thank you for choosing this platform to include in your day. I'd like to mention a couple. Here's what's on my list of things to talk about. Obviously, the border, the eclipse. I just want to touch on that because there's something not right. I was telling my wife, I told Eric the Tech right before airtime. I said, I just feel there's something, something's not right. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's me. Maybe it was that taco I had last night, that fish taco. I'm kidding. Just something not right, folks. Are you feeling it? Just something not right. Is it related to the eclipse? I don't know. The Chinese Communist Party versus the United States, which really overlaps as an umbrella over everything that we're going to be, talking about. And first up, that ship, the Dolly, that hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge. The more information I'm getting on this, the more I can fit into, and I brought these books for a reason, the more I can fit into the information by Peter Schweitzer in his book Red Handed, as well as Blood Money. Okay, so just so you know, I do read Red Handed, Blood Money. By the way, Alex Marlowe, Breaking Biden. That, what's going on with the Communist Chinese Party has everything to do with these books, or these books have everything to do with the Chinese Communist Party, Biden, and the people in office. And the other subject I want to talk about is the plans by the left to keep Donald Trump off of the ballot. You don't think that's possible? Oh, it is. But it's more than the left. It's the right as well. The swampy Republican right. Think about Mike Gallagher, the representative Mike Gallagher, who is resigning from the House on April 19th. Now, Wisconsin has this rule. It's really simple. It's not that difficult. If you resign before the second Tuesday in April, which is April 9th of this year, then they can hold a special election and a Republican can get put back into that seat. And think about the razor-thin majority we have in the House. Oh, no, Gallagher doesn't want to do that. He's resigning on the 19th, not the 9th. Did he look at his calendar and actually or accidentally add a 1 to the 9? No. Which, by the way, 19th Hitler's birthday, does that mean anything? Probably not. I don't know. But you talk about a swampy Republican, folks. That's a tactic that will cause, by the way, that seat to be vacant until the November election. And I guarantee you, behind him, the swampy Republican, will be a handful more Republicans to swing the House to the right, or to the left, I'm sorry, to the Communist Party, Democratic Party, but the Communist Party that we have, and the communists that we have, the infiltration that we have, the people bought off with, you ready, with blood money by the communist Chinese. And what's going to happen, or what could very well happen, what they're planning on, because they know it's too big to rig, what's going to happen, I believe, is the House is going to be, the majority is going to be by the left, the communist left. And when that happens, who becomes speaker? The most likely speaker candidate, given the all of the talk and all of the tenure, is going to be Hakeem Jeffries. What does all this matter? Because when Donald Trump just creams the left, and they know it, they can feel it coming. They know it. Oh, they know it. What'll happen? The House can, and okay, there's two scenarios here you have to be aware of. The first one is with Kennedy involved, and Kennedy, believe me, is no friend to any conservative, RFK Jr. No friend. He's right. He's absolutely dead nuts accurate with respect to the clot shots and the bioweapon. And Fauci, he's 100% accurate, but his politics suck. He picks some, I don't know what part of his anatomy he was thinking of when he picked his vice presidential running mate. Of course, she's more of a leftist than he is. She's up there with, well, she's far to the left of Obama. but anyway, she's the ex-wife of the guy from Google. Anyway, but what's going to happen is this, or what could happen? Potential A. Because Kennedy's in there, I'm not sure this would happen, but let's toss this out there as a possibility. Neither Trump nor Biden would get the majority necessary of electoral votes necessary for a win. So it would go to where? It would go to Congress. And as I tried to explain yesterday, each state gets one vote based on the representation in the House of Representatives to name the president based on the number of electoral votes, okay, or the electoral votes, the people in the election. Who do you think that's going to go to with a leftist majority in the House? Or stated probably more accurately, although the same thing, the conservative or Republican minority based on the actions of Gallagher and others like him yet to come. Who do you think that the president would be? You're right. Status quo. Joseph Robinette, the oyster bunny Biden. That's right, oyster bunny. All right. The second potential aspect of this with Hakeem Jeffries in is speaker, they bring forth a bill that tweaks or that focuses on the 14th Amendment, insurrection, and what? And what? They declare through the legislative process that Donald Trump is an insurrectionist and therefore he is not a valid candidate and he's gone. So the next level up would be Joe Biden based on the electoral count. Or that could even happen before, but around that same time. And Biden's in there. Or there are other possibilities as well. Or as my friend Joel Gilbert says, you know, they could around election time, around the convention time in August, they could all of a sudden get a Michelle Obama in there. Good old Michael, Big Mike, or Gavin Newsom. That's right, Newsom. Many possibilities. All right, let me get back on track. But pay attention. Don't discount any of this because they are desperate. The left, the communist left, they're desperate. They know they're losing. I mean, look at the optics. Look at the optics with respect to that fundraiser when you had Clinton the rapist, Obama the fake, and Biden, the oatmeal for brains, Biden, at the fundraiser in New York City on the same day President Donald Trump attends the funeral of that slain New York City police officer. Think of the optics there. And by the way, did you happen to see the Raging Cajun James Carville talking about, man, we got to do something about the border. You know why? Because a lot of these young people, not just the border, but everything, but a lot of young people, they're registering Republicans. So they know they're going to get trounced. And they know that maybe, just maybe, the cheat, Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, the law firm representing them, a reference to the car guys. If you're as old as I am, you remember that. Eric Tech, you remember the car guys? You ever listen to them? Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Good stuff, man. I love that. But anyway, I'm telling you, there is chicanery afoot. Not an arm, not a leg, but a foot. There's chicanery afoot. All right. I want to get right to this. This, to me, is important because what is happening right now is something. We are at war. You know that, right? We're at war. America is at war with the communist Chinese. And I, Clay Clark, a friend of mine, friend of the program, and say what you will about him, okay? Think what you want. I don't care. But he said there are three things. When the Euphrates began, and he's quoting from the Bible, from the book of Revelation, when the Euphrates dries up, there were three things. When the Euphrates dries up, when China and Russia team up, and when the false prophet appears, our time is almost up. And I believe that to be the case. China and Russia, I believe, are teaming up, but China is taking the point on this. They're looking in a lot longer. They've got a lot longer idea for global domination. They're a very patient population. So what does this have to do with the Francis Scott Key Bridge? First of all, it's symbolic. Second of all, nothing makes sense about the explanation as to what happened. Now, in my many hours, and I'm telling you, Eric the Tech can verify this, many hours of watching every single broadcast I can watch, left, right, middle, cable, not cable, everything, I found one piece that I felt was extremely worthy of airing this. I like Grant Stinchfield, like him a lot. Yesterday he had a guest on, and they were talking about this incident. And by the way, I had spoken to and written a column for Wisconsin Christian News about this subject in this coming issue, the upcoming issue of Wisconsin Christian News. And before I get into this, I will add, I think there is one ticket left. I'm not sure, but I think there might be one ticket left. There may be two. I got a communication from Rob Pugh from Wisconsin Christian News. The conference next, I guess it is next week, isn't it? April 12th and 13th at Rothschild, Wisconsin. I think it's the Stony Creek Inn Conference Center, Hotel and Conference Center. Limited number of seats. Now, I'd love to, look, folks, I'd love to see you there. I'd love to shake your hand, give you a hug, whatever it might be. I'm not allowed to do that. No hugs, fist bump, whatever. Okay. But I'd love to meet you and say hello and personally thank you. But aside from that, get your ticket for the conference, the one or two that are left. WisconsinChristianNews.com. CoachDaveLive.com is where you get the tickets. And that's all she wrote. Probably the last time I'll mention it. But I'm going to be bringing some very interesting material that's not been seen outside of, well, it's just not been seen. Okay. Very few people have seen it. All right. Grant Stinchfield last night brought a guest on. At the 27-minute mark is when this starts, and this is, should be queued up at this point. They're talking about this incident. I might add, when I did write my column for Wisconsin Christian News, I had spoken to Josh, my stepson, who is extremely well-versed. I mean, he's got apps, which blew my mind, that that cost like $1,000 every 2 weeks to keep track of shipping and cargo and all this stuff. I mean, I couldn't afford. I mean, really? But of course, his business pays for that. But we were talking about this, and he said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "That black box going dark for 2 minutes. There's like three different things that he said I want to tell you, and all three relate to this particular segment of Grant's program last night. The remote control possibilities that were put in place in vessels, in cars, and in other items by way of Chinese manufacturing played a role in this, number one. Number two, that black box, 2 minutes missing. It's not by accident, and it's not missing. It was deliberately either turned off or manually, which is a lesser of a possibility, manually messed with. And the third possibility is some of the cargo. And by the way, some of the cargo, very interesting when you start, because he does have an ability to look at some of the cargo, what's on the ship. Ultimate destinations, one included Ukraine. What's going to Ukraine? Others included electronics that have both transmission and receiving capabilities, like a cell phone or a satellite phone. But remember, this is coming out of the U.S. I'm thinking more military equipment. You got me on this one and him on this one as well. Hazmat, hazardous materials that also are related to this CDC. Go figure. What's that about? Now, I'm not 100% sure, nor was he given the way that it was presented on the manifest, if that's what you call it. I should bring him in, and we should have a conversation about this. Extremely intelligent about this. But he said, look, there's no way, in his view, there's no way that was a normal accident. So out of everything I've heard, all the people I've heard talk about it, this was probably the best interview. Folks, I urge you to listen carefully to this interview. Oh, it's going to be a little bit long. It's going to be several minutes, but well worth it. Please listen. Please watch. It's cut one in the show notes at HagmanPI.com. Here it is.
Folks, I want to make this very clear. I need federal investigators to do a thorough investigation of the crash into the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore that brought that bridge tumbling down into the water. This giant freighter that crashed into it may, and I say may, we don't know this, but there are a lot of talk about this remote towing technology that China possesses. This is not a conspiracy theory when I tell you the FBI has already investigated this, when they believe remote towing technology was used to hijack a yacht of a Chinese dissident billionaire. Now, whistleblowers within the Chinese Communist Party, with the new federal state of China, say they have confirmed that China did use remote towing technology on this ship. Now, I don't know if this is true, but I can tell you the new federal state of China has been spot on in many cases, if not all the cases I've reported. This is them over the weekend going public with their findings.
This attack is being carried out by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, using remote towing technology. It is a terrorist attack. The CCP has launched a terrorist operation against the United States on American soil. The bad news is that if the CCP can tow a freighter to collapse Baltimore's bridge, they can do the same with any car, ship, elevator, any vehicle you can think of. As long as it has a connection to signal and data, a chip, an antenna, a radio, etc.
All right, that is frightening. It needs to be looked into by the FBI. Now, some of this would make sense because thanks to an investigative journalist who does some great work, I was reading a paper from him that basically says these ships, the Dali especially, is built in 2015 by Hyundai. According to federal and international maritime standards, they are supposed to have redundancy, two power systems and gear systems. It reads from the federal standards, power operated main and auxiliary steering gear must be separate systems that are independent throughout their length. They also require two power systems. These power systems must come online within 45 seconds of losing initial power. This also from the federal regulations that basically read that these steering gear electric redundancies should be available automatically within 45 seconds of loss of power from the vessel's service switchboard, comes from an independent source of power in the steering gear compartment, and is used for no other purpose. So that alone would make no sense of how this ship would lose power and then turn, make that twist to the right, starboard, directly into this pier. We were also initially told that there were 13 knot winds. Well, this investigative journalist did a simple search with the weather service, NOAA, and said there were only 4 knot winds. So that doesn't make any sense. All the while, the FBI had been crying this from the very, very beginning. Listen.
The FBI, on very first looking at and assessing this matter from an investigative standpoint, I want to be clear that there is no specific or credible information to suggest that there are ties to terrorism in this incident. And as the investigation goes on, we will take it to its logical conclusion along with our partners.
All right, pause right there. Just keep, you can keep that up, but I want or whatever. You don't have to keep it up, but we'll continue this. But that man right there that you saw, that man. Did you know that he worked at the FBI, Washington D.C. headquarters, until Monday? He was at the Baltimore desk Monday morning. The crash happened early Tuesday morning after midnight. 1:04 a.m. is when things began to start. The crash happened at about 1:28 a.m. on Tuesday morning. But he was transferred from the Washington field office or Washington headquarters to the Baltimore field office the day before that ship hit the bridge. Coincidence? You could say that. But you know what? How many coincidences do you have before it becomes, questionable? If you don't mind, go ahead and continue that.
They were very quick to declare that. When you're an investigator, you look at every possibility, you overturn every stone. You don't just make a declaration like that when you don't know what's responsible for this in the hours following it. Well, joining me now is that investigative journalist, a writer, true crime writer, and co-author of The Courage to Face COVID-19 with Dr. Peter McCullough. You can read more from him at authorjohnleake.com. I want to bring in John Leake to the program. John, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right, John, I looked at your Substack that spelled out these redundancies. What do you believe is going on here? And it's interesting because everybody's calling you a conspiracy theorist. You didn't even say anything. You just raised questions. And now all of a sudden they're saying, well, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why 100,000-ton cargo ships, container vessels, don't just go slamming into bridges. I mean, it almost never happens. There was an incident in Tampa in 1980 of a major bridge collision that did a hell of a lot of damage to a bridge down there. But this just almost never happens. And so the first question I thought was, well, So what were the circumstances? And the circumstances just kind of, we've seen this many times in recent years. What's being presented to us from the National Transportation Safety Board raises more questions than it answers. So that ship was steaming straight down the Fort McHenry Channel.
If you can pause that,
it was
right
on course.
On. I want to mention that the NTSB has not yet, well, until today, interviewed the pilots of that ship. Think about that. This is the second day of April. The accident happened, or the incident happened last week. And it's only today the NTSB is interviewing the pilots. Go ahead.
On a 140 degree heading, going straight down the channel towards the channel where it exits the bridge when it lost power. It should have just held its course. It's a 100,000-ton vessel going 8.7 knots. If with the rudder input where it is when it loses power, it should just hold its course. Why?
All right.
Just 2 minutes before it got even with the channel, did it make this left turn, or excuse me, right turn, starboard turn into the pier? I just find very, very puzzling.
Let me just remind people of some things here. A lot of military equipment goes through that channel. We had CDC containers on board labeled hazmat. I'd love to know where the CDC containers. That's another story. Where are those CDC containers going? What was in them? Maybe a coincidence they were on board. Maybe not. I don't know what else was on board this ship. I've heard talk that there was cargo on board that was headed for Ukraine. I don't know if that's the case. You've got the Voyage data recorder, well, basically the black box that goes silent for 2 minutes, doesn't record any data. And you've got questions about what the pilot was doing. Now, you did a simple search of wind and currents because they were blaming wind and currents on this. What did you find?
Well, I just went to NOAA, they have a station on the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and I did a historic search for March 26, between midnight and the collision. The wind was blowing out of 35 degrees. If you look on a wind rose, that's coming north-northeast, 4.5 knots. The vessel is steaming to on a course of 140 degrees, so heading southeast. That would have created an apparent wind on the nose of the vessel of 8.7 knots, which would have completely canceled this 4.5 knot breeze out of north northwest. So there was no wind acting on this vessel at all. Same with all the right. tide. It was slack tide.
And investigators have brought up these scenarios. What do you say to investigators that say, oh, they rule things out right away? You've had cold cases you've solved. You are at the forefront of solving this COVID disaster. What do you say to investigators that make declarations hours into a crime scene, possible crime scene?
I mean, that's always suspicious. Why wouldn't you just state there's a hell of a lot of stuff that we need to examine in this? We need to interview the pilot. We need to examine the voice data recorder. I mean, this is an extreme, highly anomalous event. We need to carefully look at it, and we'll inform the public as soon as we possibly can. That would have been a more appropriate response to me.
I'd like to just say this could be come out to be some tragic accident. It could be come out to be that, like the new federal state of China says, maybe China did hack the electronics in the boat. The problem is we don't know. And they throw terms around like you're a conspiracy theorist. Guess what, John Leake? They did the same thing to you and Dr. McCullough during COVID, and all your conspiracy theories came out to be true. I'll give you the last word, 15 seconds, if you can.
Well, we don't. propound theories. We were presented with stories from our government agencies that just don't make sense, or at any rate have very incongruous, implausible sounding elements. So we ask questions. I think that we're doing the work that the legacy media is supposed to be doing. Independent journalists and investigators like us, we're just doing the job that the legacy media should be doing. And I know you're doing the same, yeah. Grant.
Well, we certainly try. And legacy media, corporate media, fake news media, whatever you want to call it, you can't get the real scoop from them. You can from guys like you. John Leake, I appreciate you coming on the program. Give me the website again real quick.
AuthorJohnLeake.com, and I'm at the Courageous Discourse Substack with Dr. Peter McCullough.
Awesome. I highly
there
recommend.
You go, John.
That's good. You can cut that. Folks, I highly recommend. Go to HagmanPI.com. Open up the description box. That's the only place you're going to find the source videos for what I play. All right, at HagmanPI.com. In the program description box for today. So he raised some interesting points about the remote control of ships. Now, the Dolly was constructed after 2015, as stated, and the remote control obviously would be a part of that. Okay, anything of late manufactured by China has backdoors in it. The phones, obviously, you know that. The televisions, the anything and everything has that capability. Cars especially, vehicles especially, can be remotely taken over. Now, why am I pointing, for example, at the Communist Chinese Party? I'm going to do this out of order, hopefully to make Eric the Tech's life easier. I don't make it easy for him. What's that? Okay. Yeah, he reminds me of that. I'm joking. He's a hard worker, and I've got to say I would be nowhere without Eric the Tech, and I got to publicly thank him for all that he does, because he's a man that I could not do what I do without him. I could, but it would be really sloppy. I got to thinking, how long has this been going on? How long has the Communist Chinese Party really been after the U.S.? My answer to that, a lot longer than people think. In the time I was taking a break from watching the headbanging news, I just wanted to watch something to take my mind off everything. And what do I land on? The Outer Limits from 1963. I don't know how many people remember that show. Kind of like in the same genre of The Twilight Zone, in the same genre of science fiction thrillers. And I happened upon, out of all the potential episodes, I happened upon an episode titled The 100 Days of the Dragon. As soon as it started, it was like, wow, okay. So I watched it. This is about the Chinese communists infiltrating our government. Now, again, keep in mind, this is 1963. Actually, this episode came out on September 23rd, 1963. I want to show you the trailer to this particular episode. And keep this in the back of your mind throughout the rest of the show. because I did. I mean, I will. And when I saw this, I thought, wow, I've got to show people this. And back then, I wonder how many people thought, oh, man, that is so stupid. That could never happen. That will never happen. That's all just a bunch of science fiction. Folks, take a look at this. 1963, The Outer Limits, Episode 2 of the series. Here it is.
William Lyon Selby, candidate for the presidency of the United States, predicted by every poll, survey, and primary to be a certain winner in the forthcoming election.
Your Excellency, this is Major Ho Chi Wong.
I am honored, Excellency.
He has committed to memory every known detail of Selby's life. You are about to witness the most unique achievement that has come from years of research and experimentation in molecular plasticity.
Of President of the United States, will to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
You're not the President of the United States. You're a murderer and an imposter.
The 100 Days of the Dragon. How many people back then thought, oh, that's not possible? So, Eric the Tech, given your younger age, I should say, let me ask you, would you think of that? I mean, watching it today, I'm sure back then, if you were of age back then, you probably would have thought, wow, how crazy is that thought? But looking at that today, what do you think? Just briefly.
They've been doing that for a long time.
And for radio listeners who didn't have the chance to see that, I would urge you to go to HagmanPI.com and watch the trailer or watch the entire episode. I think it's available free. I'm not 100% certain, but I saw it free. So, but
and
anyway.
Of course, they live.
They live, that's right.
If you haven't seen that, I'm sure everybody has seen that.
Yeah, which that was, I think, in the 80s that came out, I believe, John Carpenter. But this got me thinking, you know, I wonder, beyond the graft, beyond the money that changes hands as illustrated and documented by Peter Schweitzer, one of the foremost, I believe, investigative journalists and writers, authors on the planet with respect to the communist China. I wonder how many, you know, I wonder if that didn't happen. I see comments on social media all the time, and I know, Eric, you do too, about, look, that person seems to be wearing a mask, or the Biden mask. How many Bidens are there? How many different people are there? And of course, that dealt with this molecular structure of the face and the impression, again, for radio listeners, an impression made of a plasticized face, made to look like the person, the intended subject. Could that be? I'm asking, could it be? I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, if they are at the point of being able to change our DNA, yes, change our DNA. And you know, I think that's beyond argument. I really do. I think that enough has been there's enough evidence to prove that there is a and Tucker Carlson had a guest on, a German neuroscientist, talking about the injections and actually the bioweapon itself changing things in the brain. I don't know how many people saw that. I was going to cut some of that for today, but folks, you can see it on social media, the important parts, at least, I believe. And you can watch the whole thing. Okay. It's, I believe that we are at that point where things are not as they appear to be. You know, I'm not going to show you Biden calling the Easter bunnies when he was standing on the Truman balcony oyster bunnies. I'm not going to show you that, or sniffing the kids' hair again, or, you know, that whole mess. We know Biden's a mess. Which, by the way, also, wouldn't you want somebody a little bit better than that? You know, if you're going to, but I digress. All right. But think about that bridge. Think about the outer limits that you saw. But most importantly, think about the umbrella of the Communist Chinese Party and how they want to dominate the world. Yeah, Klaus Schwab wants to dominate. Others want to dominate. But the fact is, the CCP has implemented a plan. Think about The Art of War, the book. Think about the material that has been written by the Chinese military for the destruction or the takeover of the United States and really of the West. Think about that. In so doing, think about the Bidens. The Bidens being in office. Why? This has bothered me. Out of all of the people in the 2020 lineup, you have Joe Biden. Now, of course, he has been compromised, extremely compromised. But did they intend for him to be to decline this rapidly? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know this. The Biden's legacy will always be linked to communist China. As a matter of fact, both China and the Bidens have benefited mutually. The Biden family, they've scored millions worth of deals with the Chinese businessmen, the Chinese Communist Party connected entities, whether it be Joe himself, Hunter, James, Valerie, the grandkids. I'm telling you, they're all connected. The businesses that, especially now, when you look at the investigations, which, by the way, would be cut, stopped, ceased, tossed, shattered to the winds by Hakeem Jeffries, should what I mentioned earlier happen, there would be no more investigations of the ties between the Bidens and the Chinese, at least at the congressional level. But to fully understand the extent to which the Biden family has worked with the world's communist superpower to enrich themselves, folks, it would take a huge whiteboard and a hell of a lot of lines or a lot of ink on the markers. It would take more pages than all the books I have in front of me. What's more, this is not isolated to the Biden family. Many within the Biden's orbit, including donors or people in his cabinet or people in Congress or other politicians, benefit from the same loopholes, benefit from the same relationships, benefit from the same, really from all of the same things that the Bidens do and have done. A couple of things. Biden made his first overseas trip to China since becoming senator in 1972. His first trip was in 1979 when he was chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Back then, he met with Chairman Deng Xiaoping, just as U.S. and China had formalized the new ties that Kissinger had secretly started to craft back during the Nixon regime a year before, or 10 years before. And Biden talks about that quite often, his trips to China and his essentially love of China and the Chinese people. The Bidens have done at least five deals with key players in the Chinese military, in the Chinese intelligence, and throughout the Chinese government. Now, I'm talking about five deals as either vice president or president, more on the, or actually throughout that period of time, where he traded on the Biden name and influence. For example, deal one. Hunter Biden sold Rosemont Realty to a Hong Kong-based company called Gemini in 2014. Was I vice president back then? Just to reference his deposition. Gemini is owned by Sino-Ocean Land, an entity affiliated with China Ocean Shipping Corporation, or COSCO, which congressional leaders have accused of being a front for Chinese military, their military-industrial complex. In 1996, COSCO, they were caught smuggling 2,000 so-called assault rifles, actually automatic weapons, into the U.S. on board their own ships. This is, again, in 1996. The House Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare labeled COSCO an arm of the Chinese military establishment. And at the time, he met whatever that chairman's name is. He referred to himself, or referred to COSCO, as the head of the dragon due to its strategic importance globally. So this is a kind of deal in 2014 that Hunter Biden is making with the communist Chinese. Well, why would the communist Chinese give a rip about Hunter Biden? You think they care about some drug-addled, STD-laden, perhaps, possibly, allegedly, maybe, who knows, prostitute visiting, crack-headed person? No, of course not. Of course not. It's all Joe Biden. Second one, Bohai Harvest. In 2013, Hunter Biden and his business partners, let's not forget, on the right, you've got, on all sides, you've got people like, for example, Mitt Romney's offspring, as well as, relations, as well as Heinz's relations. But Hunter Biden and his business partners were able to create this joint venture called Bohai Harvest, RST, in partnership with a number of state-backed financial institutions in China. Now, Hunter Biden's BHR as it's referred to, was the result of an effort to fuse Chinese financial might to those with access to the highest levels of power in the Western world. And it worked. Kind of like the Outer Limits thing that you saw. Hey, it worked there, for at least for a while. And then you have Burnham Asset Management. One of Hunter's closest Chinese associates is Henry Zhao, a major figure in China's industry and military and ruling elite. Zhao had co-founded Harvest Global Investments. Okay. Now, I'm not going to get into all of the aspects of it, except to say that Hunter's company received an investment from the spouse of China's top propagandist in that deal, with that deal. And then you've got, as you know, CFC and China Energy. In that case, a man with close ties to the Chinese government and military sent Biden family companies, the companies, the LLCs, the various corporations and businesses associated with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, James Biden, Valerie Biden, the Biden crime family, millions of dollars. That was the deal that involved the 3.17 carat diamond worth some $80,000 that Hunter says, I don't know where that is. I can't remember where I put it. You know, I hate when that happens. I have that problem too. I got an $80,000 diamond. I misplaced it. And then you got Patrick Ho, of course, and CFC and Patrick Ho back in 2017. The spy chief of China hired Hunter for absolutely no apparent reason. Jim Biden was also involved with CEFC and Patrick Ho as well. So collectively, I just gave you five examples there. Collectively, what is that? That's buying influence. That is infiltration by the Communist Chinese Party just to the Bidens. But folks, it's not limited just to the Bidens. It involves congressmen that represent members of the House, members of the Senate, top cabinet officials, members of the military in the U.S. I guess they don't need face molding things, right, anymore. They can just obviously go with the greed. Again, think about what is taking place with respect to Communist China and the United States. If you want to take over a country without firing a shot, as outlined in the Art of War, forgive me for the name of the book, but Restricted Warfare as well, you know what I'm speaking about. All right. What does that have to do with everything else? Well, an extremely important aspect to all of this is to take out the citizenry or to cause our citizens, especially those of fighting age, to become docile, to become impaired in some way. What better way to do that than through fentanyl? You know, you can see all sorts of videos of people on the streets, big cities, who appear to be totally just gone from drug use. What's the drug of choice now? The synthetically made fentanyl. Okay. Where's it coming from? It's generally coming by way of our southern border. I believe you have to believe as well that the CIA the intelligence agencies here in America know of the import into the U.S. And don't forget, who is responsible? What agencies were responsible for introducing cocaine, heroin, and other drugs into San Francisco back in the 60s, into L.A. back in the 60s, late 50s, early 60s? Our own intelligence agencies. Kind of about the same time that Outer Limits came out, right? But how bad is it? There's a mini documentary. I'm going to play just a couple of minutes. I think this is pretty interesting because this is not in the streets of Juarez, Mexico. This is in the U.S. And I'm playing this not for effect, but watch the danger within our own borders that befall the makers of this mini documentary called Skid Row. Consider the dangers, okay? Because that's another part of all of this that many people don't talk about. And this is within our own borders. Go ahead and play cut three.
This is Skid Row, the largest homeless camp and most dangerous neighborhood in America, with an estimated 10,000 plus homeless people living on its 25 blocks of drug-fueled and crime-ridden streets and tents. But why are these homeless people so violent? How did they end up here in the first place? And what could be done to get them off the streets? So I brought my friend Kevin, a leading expert in homelessness and drug addiction, who showed me Portland, Oregon's drug epidemic 2 months ago.
Skid Row has been around, I think, since about the 1920s. It's never really improved. LA is a tourist destination. Having all these homeless has been kind of an inconvenience to them. So they're working on containing these homeless and really, in a sense, hiding them. So, you know, they're adding up fencing. They're doing sanctioned camping. They're restricting people from certain blocks. That's a good 100 people right there. There definitely doesn't seem to be any order. Just drove by a guy using fentanyl behind us. Looked like he was maybe in his 70s. I suggest we stop and walk around and say hi to a few people.
All right, let's go into Skid Row, shall we?
This is why people don't go out here and do outreach, is because of the fear. But someone has to come out here and do it.
And immediately upon entering, we learned that everyone here hates cameras.
Don't feel me, homie.
How you doing?
Don't put the camera on me.
No, we won't. He's outside. You're good.
We soon learned why.
Oh, are you smoking crack right now? Is that what that is?
No, this is meth.
And mid-conversation, some speeding gangsters with AR-15s zoom past us.
From Vitala.
Saw some guns.
Oh, no.
ARs in the back of the car. Yeah, we saw AR-15s. We're gonna walk out, guys. Thank you so much for talking. Stay safe, okay? Hold on, retreat. Real talk.
This is AR-15s
in the back of the car.
Something going down a couple blocks away, and yes, it's good that we walked away. Well, there are a lot of gangs in the area, and we unfortunately encountered a gang.
And then we stumbled upon this dude lighting a pipe.
Hey there, how you guys doing?
How you doing?
I love y'all. Oh, what's up? Hey, Pasha, watch this. What's up? No, we're good. Hey, watch for a second. Back. How you doing? We only mean good out here. Yeah. We're good to chat?
The block leader pulled up on us and basically forced us to give him a $20 protection fee. After we agreed, everything calmed down.
My name is Jeremy Johnson.
Jeremy Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you were just lighting up something. What was that?
I just lightened up. Today is a beautiful day. Jeremy. People's out here is in sheet clothes. Like they night. Blah, blah, blah. Day is not night.
Who are those? Who are those people? Who?
Them
who?
Is the demons.
Is that us?
Like her. She got a sheep. She a human sheep.
How long you been homeless out here, bro?
That's the demons. The blacks. Look at him. Look at him, y'all. All they do is cuss. Look at him. He's a demon. Boy, I don't know where you're from, but you look like a Huckleberry Finn. Don't let them trick you with the cover.
Okay. Jeremy Johnson, I saw you lighting something up.
You not no good guy.
No.
He's the one.
I'm a demon.
It's fentanyl out here, people. Fentanyl and it's taking them down to the ground and they would never come back.
Tell me about fentanyl. Why am I a demon also?
No, he's not no demon.
He's a demon.
Yeah, right.
Tell me what it's like to be homeless out here. Is it relatively safe or not safe for people?
It's not safe, folks. Don't come down here and get that meal ready to run now. It's scary. You don't hurt me, man. Don't hurt me, man.
You're not gonna hurt him, right? We're good.
First thing he gonna do?
No. We're good. Whoa. No. We're good. All right, we're no demons. We're gonna let you have a good day, though. All right, thanks, Jeremy. All right, he's pissed. Sorry, bro. Okay, that was quite the interaction.
Yeah, they got a little weird.
5 minutes in, the people in Skid Row seem to be way more aggressive and violent than the fentanyl users we saw in Portland and the zombified shrank users we saw in Kensington. As I wondered what the drug of choice was out here, I stumbled upon
Raphael Leach.
And what is this building right here?
SRO, single room occupancy.
Okay, and this is for homeless people to get off the streets and start living?
Yes.
And you used to be on the streets yourself?
Yes, I used to be homeless off the streets, now 3 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How hard was it to get off the streets once you got there?
It's not hard.
It's not hard?
No.
That's a big misconception.
Drug user is hard.
Were you on drugs back then?
No, I just smoked drink, you know, but they consider that a drug.
Sure.
You know, but no.
So there's money and aid and subsidies to get off the streets?
Of course, yeah. If you want it, most of the people don't want it. And most of the people are drug addicts. So, boy, if you want something, you go get it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to fight to get off the streets, you're going to get off the streets.
But I wondered what resources were really out here to help these people get off the streets and stay sober. And I soon found a sign advertising free Narcan, which is an opioid blocker to prevent you from dying due to an overdose.
So you guys give out Narcan to anyone who asks for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But people generally are asking it for whenever we need it.
Okay.
That's nice.
The reason there are this many people here is because it's a resource-heavy area. So if I was someone experiencing homelessness, I might go to somewhere where there's resources.
Got it.
There's signs everywhere, Narcan here. So at least in that respect, they're trying.
It seemed like the free Narcan, food, water, sobriety centers, and outreach workers ironically attract even more homeless people to come here. But do these people even want to get off the streets? This guy had an interesting opinion.
I like the members of the white majority.
The white majority?
Yeah, you guys are members of the white majority.
Oh, shoot, yeah. Okay.
Hi, you guys. My name is Palmer Torres, and welcome to Skid Row.
Okay, you like that we're members of the white majority?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So what it means is that I'm a minority, and I appreciate what you guys being the biggest influence in the country. You guys have built an amazing country.
Okay.
Yes.
So what are you up to today, Juan?
I just experienced a spider bite from a brown recluse.
Okay.
So what happened was is that I slept in some bushes one night.
From what I saw in Kensington, this looked more like flesh decay from repeated use of trank, a drug which is a combination of fentanyl and horse tranquilizer.
So Juan, are you doing fentanyl out here?
How you know? Yes, I am. But I'm quick to defend fentanyl.
Okay, tell me about it. Why would you defend fentanyl?
Yeah. Well, because I am a former IV user, and because of fentanyl, I no longer can inject heroin. And so I would rather smoke fentanyl than to inject heroin.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because injecting is something that should be done by professionals. I mean, it's ugly, like the way it looks, and also it's very dangerous. You can contract diseases and stuff. Yeah, so I'm grateful for heroin.
I've seen skin necrosis from heroin, from IV drug people using IV drugs, okay? And brown recluse my ass, okay? But did you hear, first of all, going back just a little bit, you saw that they had to pay a gang leader for protection to stand there. This is a blue city in a blue state. These are all blue cities run by the leftist scumbags. The communist scumbags. Where are these drugs coming from? Where? China. Well, the components are coming from China to Mexico, being assembled, mixed in Mexico or the U.S., along with pill presses that are used to fake some medications or some drugs. And fentanyl, of course, being inexpensive, is being used as a filler or really more of a death drug to make these people into zombies. But this guy is pretty much like talking to Joe Scarborough. I imagine. I've never talked to Joe, but I suspect it'd be like having a conversation with Scarborough over a cup of coffee. Go ahead and continue.
heroin. I thank China for having made it. Yes, there are many Americans who have lost their lives, but I think that when it was made, it was made in a way to where if you're smart about it and you smoke, you know, in small increments, you know, I believe that it also heals you and relieves you of certain, you know, stressors.
Got it. You don't think fentanyl's killing you?
I do not think so, no.
Kevin, do you have any thoughts?
And by the way,
I respectfully disagree.
And you can, fentanyl has legitimate uses for cancer patients, for terminally ill people. It has legitimate uses. This does not. And did you hear what he said? I thank China for making it. You think these people don't know? And you heard that guy sitting in front of that single room occupancy building. It's not that hard unless you're addicted. Well, how about this? China, unrestricted warfare. The art of war. Let's do this to America. Let's bring down the people from within. Not only are we taking out potentially productive people, but we're also creating liabilities like this. Go ahead and continue.
Okay. I've had a lot of people I've witnessed die because of fentanyl.
Yeah.
I think fentanyl is the deadliest, worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And so I know how you think it's different because you don't have to inject. Fentanyl is killing people left and right.
Yeah.
So what at the very least I ask is don't encourage other people to
do
this.
Oh, no.
But this guy was the exception because the more we talked to people, it seemed like crack and meth were the most popular drugs out here. Unlike fentanyl in Portland and shrank in Kensington. Do you ever use fentanyl?
No.
Okay.
I'm trying to stay woke.
What do you use?
Okay.
How do you get out of here?
Good question. If I had that remedy, I wouldn't be here.
Is there violence out here?
Yeah. Wait, quit playing. Yeah, you know, give it 5 minutes, you finish something.
She was right, as this dude got slapped in the face right behind us for no reason.
There's one thing the city or the government could do to help. What just happened?
He just slapped him in the face.
You just got slapped. Are you okay?
I'm okay.
Are you okay?
I mean, for no reason. He just slapped you.
People just hurt each other. But it is.
For no reason, the guy just got slapped in the face. It seemed like the predominant use of meth and crack was making these people so violent. And 3 minutes later, we experienced it firsthand.
This is my friend Tyler. He was wanting to get
away. Hey, how you doing?
No.
Oh, we're good. We're just talking to him. While Kevin tried to calm this guy down with money, this cracked out gangster called my cameraman a dumbass bleeper and said he would knock his ass out if he didn't delete the album, as this guy began to follow us, threatening our lives.
Let's not do this. Chill.
Kevin thought our best option was for him to confront the guy and his gang alone, using his charisma to defuse the situation.
Okay,
I disagreed, but he still went.
And folks, I would urge you to watch the entire mini-documentary on Skid Row, titled Skid Row. But again, to get the idea of the asymmetrical hybrid warfare by the Communist Chinese Party, by the Communist Chinese against the United States. So let's go a little further south. This next cut four is 10 seconds, no audio. This was taken by Todd Benzman. Todd Benzman, great book, Overrun. I can't recommend that high. I mean, I recommend that very highly. Watch this video, and I'll narrate over it. This is Juarez at the border to the U.S. And if you look close, you can see the Border Patrol on the left keeping the invaders on the right in Mexico. And the razor wire that is just barely visible on the left, what would you call that, upright of the trench. All right, that's what's taking place right now. Juarez is perhaps, just across the way from El Paso, Juarez is one of the biggest crime, biggest threats to our safety. Of course, ask Mayorkas, the Cuban communist Cubal Mayorkas, the head of DHS, hey, everything is secure at the border. Well, here it is, until it's not. Let's go to cut five. Todd Benzman again, because there's another aspect to this. You know, I talked about the Bidens and their connection to the Chinese. enrichment by the Chinese. It's just not the Chinese, but primarily the Chinese. You can trace Chinese money and money by Soros and other entities into or to the invasion. It's not that difficult. Listen to Todd Benzman and watch Todd Benzman in this interview as he explains, as I mentioned this week, and I think last week as well, the Florida Gateway. Does Governor DeSantis know about this? And if so, what's he going to do about it? How about the other governors as well? Watch this, cut five.
Todd Benzman, talk to me. Another blockbuster story from you coming out from your investigation. This is kind of amazing about what's happening. It's amazing. I think Governor DeSantis and these guys aren't maybe up on it, or maybe they aren't doing something we don't see. But walk our audience through exactly what you found through your analysis and what's going on here, sir.
Sure. Coming to you here from Juarez in my hotel room. This is a story at CIS.org. We've talked about this many times. The administration about a year ago put up an air flights immigration admissions program where they just fly people who were going to cross the border, aspiring border crossers, directly from foreign airports into U.S. airports. We have a FOIA lawsuit, the whole bit. The government will not give us the names of these airports where they're flying them in. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them, almost 400,000 that they've flown in this way. But I figured out a way to get closer to where they're flying.
Hold it. Full stop. Just rewind, hit that number again. 400,000, the U.S. government, the Biden regime, on taxpayers' money. Flown in 400,000?
Not on taxpayer money. They are authorizing the travel for the immigrants in foreign countries. Then they have to come up with their own airfare or arrange their own airfare. It's not government funded. It's not charter flights or anything like that. They're flying commercial, but the numbers are massive. Bringing people that were going to cross the border in through airports so that they don't have to be counted as border crossers, which is the number everybody watches. The piece that's up on CIS.org today shows that the vast majority of them seem to be coming into Florida. They're landing in Florida airports, international airports all over Florida. 326,000 of them, as near as I can tell, from about nine different countries, mainly four countries: Haiti, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. But also tens of thousands coming in through Texas, being landed in the Houston field office of the customs, U.S. Customs. And, 33,000 landing directly in New York field office. And in California, lots of thousands and thousands being flown in there. But the granddaddy of them all is Florida. We can tell that from public data manipulating and filtering through that they are coming through DeSantis's territory, right where Donald Trump lives. And we haven't heard a word about any of this from the governor because he didn't know about it. Nobody knew about this. Nobody knows this because the administration is closed kimono on all of this. They announced it publicly, yes, but then after that, nobody asked another question about it, and they certainly didn't advertise where they were flying them into. I know that DeSantis, they passed a big, tough law last year, was very upset about immigrants being bused or traveling into his state, but they're flying in by the hundreds of thousands right under his nose. So I've got to call into his office. I hope I'll get some sort of an answer or some kind
hold
of
it,
response.
Hold it. It's 400,000 and the government helps these people make the arrangements, gives them the pardon or the parole to get in here. But how would the governor know? How would the governor of any of these places know if Biden doesn't have a charter or a manifest that shows where they're actually going and won't provide that to people. I thought the last time we were on, didn't they say they couldn't even provide it to you, even with four, you had to go get it because right. they're afraid of airport security?
Right. They're hiding the ball. They have been all along. That's what we're doing. We're trying to listen. It's not just Republican territory. It's Democrat territory that is where the elected leaders are furious at all of the unfunded mandate for caring for all these. They're blaming Governor Abbott for busing them in. And it turns out that there are thousands and thousands that are flying in on a program that could be turned off at a switch on a dime from the White House at any moment. We need to have this information because it costs taxpayer money to take care of the immigrants that are entering your communities. You have to know how to budget for it, or you have to have the information so that you can petition your leaders to shut it down if that's what you want to do. So New York, for example, they had 150,000 come in since 2022. 35,000 of them were these flyers that flew into New York field office. So there's a huge percentage that they could have shut off right away if they knew about it, if they knew to ask about it. The same goes for Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott. They have flights filled with immigrants that have been approved for these that needn't have been approved, that could be not approved, flying into their states. Now, from there, we don't know where they go. I suspect that the 326,000 that have landed in Florida, not all of them stayed there. Some of them probably transferred onto domestic flights and then went further into the interior. We know that they are landing at somewhere between 35 and 43 different airports around the country. We still don't have the exact details about this, but this is new information. It moves the ball closer. Now we have the regions, at least, where they're landing, and you can figure out the probable airports from there very easily. You know, how many international airports are in South Florida, right? It's going to be Miami. It's going to be Fort Lauderdale. It's going to be, Tampa. And, it's not that hard to figure out where they're coming into.
Okay, you can cut
What's
that
your
right
response
there.
To it? I don't know.
Folks, I would urge you again to watch that entire clip, HagmanPI.com. Open up the program description. The link will be right there. All right. So what I started out with, the plan to keep Donald Trump from the White House, they've got to keep him out of the White House because once he's in there, those switches will be turned off. The Donald Trump, the first when he was sworn in the first time and throughout his tenure, he worked with Mexico. He worked with other countries to make sure this was not happening. This is why the left and the right, the swampy right, all but a handful of conservatives, that is, must keep Donald Trump out of the White House at all costs. So when you look at this, everything that we talked about today, as a whole, okay, you've got enemies of the United States within the U.S. You've got the communist Chinese who are really taking over a lot of our infrastructure. You've got communist Chinese party members buying up land near critical areas of infrastructure and military bases. Don't forget about the Chinese spy balloons that traversed our country, went over Air Force Base, where the nuclear arsenal is kept, much of it, and was allowed to continue over that as it transmitted in real time information to the communist Chinese under Biden's watch, under the U.S. military's watch, the current people in the U.S. military. once the true facts of what is taking place today come out, and they will come out, much like P. Daddy's stuff will come out, maybe not all of it, but some of it, I do believe there will be hell to pay. When you consider that fentanyl, just as an example, has killed more of our young people, more than Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam combined. And we've got many, many Chinese communist military men of military age in this country. You know we're in trouble. Folks, that'll do it. God bless you. Hey, don't forget, go to Amazon.com and pick up your copy of In the Dark of Night. And I thank you for doing so. Leave a review as well. God bless.